Hey, Roxy.
Hey, James.
How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know why?
Why?
Because Creepy Kingdom has officially launched a Patreon account.
Patreon? What's Patreon?
Well, let me tell you, Patreon is a way that the listeners of the show can support us.
So, like a Kickstarter?
Not exactly. Kickstarter only is a one-time thing. On Patreon, our listeners can support us every month. And in exchange for them supporting us, we will give them special, super awesome prizes.
How much do they have to pay to support us?
They can pay whatever they want. You could pay $1 a month. You could pay $10, $100. It's up to them.
That's really cool. So how can Creepy Kingdom fans find this Patreon thing?
Well, you could go to creepykingdom.com and check the show notes on our recent episodes, or you could go to patreon.com/creepykingdom. That's patreon.com.
I'm going to go check it out right now.
Me too.
Monster Movie Media presents.
This is Corey Burton, the voice of the El Rey Network, and the Haunted Mansion Holidays, and of course Captain Hook, and many others. And you're listening to the Creepy Kingdom Podcast.
And welcome to episode 80 of the Creepy Kingdom Podcast, a podcast all about the creepiness of the Disney films and theme parks. I am your host, Mr. James H. Carter II. Coming up in this episode, I have a conversation with Kat Cressida, the voice of Constance the Bride in the Haunted Mansion. And after that, we have a review of Trader Sam's Mahalloween dining event that took place October 12th and 13th at Disneyland. So without any further ado, let's begin. I would like to welcome our special guest, Kat Cressida. Hello.
Hello.
Thanks for coming on the show. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
So I asked you to come on because you are the voice of Constance in a Haunted Mansion. So that's pretty cool. You also do other various things for a few other attractions in the park, such as Toy Story, Midway Mania, and a few other Disney things. But and then on top of that, you also do a voice in the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror, correct?
Correct.
So what is the voice that you do in that attraction?
I'm the voice of the little girl lost in the fourth dimension.
Oh, that's cool. That's a very creepy voice.
Yeah, pretty cool.
All right, great. So, well, let's take a few steps back. I just kind of wanted to ask you what inspired you to actually get into voice acting to begin with?
That's a great question. I was a storyteller, like a lot of kids can be. Very early on, I really loved books and the Disney records. I would play them ad nauseum and drive my little brother and my parents nuts, probably hearing the same things over and over again. But it's what I usually say. It's sort of that weird thing where kids just naturally seem to gravitate towards something. And sometimes the parents, it's because it's always around them and they're surrounded by it because that's what the parents do. And sometimes they just go completely 180 and go in the other direction. And that was me. I pretty much was an extrovert and loved talking, sharing, reading out loud to people, forcing adults to listen to me read a book out loud or perform my mini version of Pinocchio or Peter Pan in the living room.
Nice.
There was something to me about communication, and there really isn't anything in the world of human beings that will ever equal what it's like to hear a story from someone personally, to hear their voice, their emotions behind their voice, the connection eye to eye when you're sitting across someone at a coffee shop, excited about something. Mm-hmm. I get sad sometimes in this age of technology, how little voice-on-voice contact actually happens and how little people actually want or crave that. And I think there's a lot of it is the social awkwardness. People are afraid and they hide behind the texting and the emails, especially the younger generations. And sometimes I go to schools, you know, I'm asked to go and talk to, you know, if I'm friends with the parents or the brothers or sisters, I'll go to their kids' elementary school and talk about voiceover and the magic of working for Disney or whatever.
Right.
And I say to these kids, you know, don't ever shy away from talking to someone, because that is one of our biggest gifts as people, is being able to convey our emotions and communicate and feel less alone in this world because there's another human being there. And I think people, without even them knowing why, I think there's a sense of disconnectedness and feeling alone, because all that's encouraged these days is emails and texts. And for a while, I was working with a bunch of folks in sort of the hip hop dance world.
Okay.
Which is a weird left turn in my career, but I was coaching some of them and in acting, some of the celebrity dancers. And there was an app where they could actually send messages, like text back and forth verbally, but without actually being in real time. It was called Heytel.
I'm unfamiliar with that. Wow.
Nuts. I mean, they would literally say, hey, you want to go to a movie? And then they'd wait 10 seconds and then they'd get the response verbally. Yeah, what movie do you want to see? But they were like texting their voice messages back and forth, as opposed to just picking up the phone and having a 2-second conversation.
Wow, that's a huge disconnect. It's like on-demand conversation. You're like, I'm not ready to say this next sentence yet. So I'm just...
so strange and so staged and so disconnected. And I would say to them, why don't you just have a quick 2-minute conversation and you can figure out what movie theater, what movie, what time, and who's joining, and be done with it, rather than it taking half an hour. And I'm still that way. I still would much rather, you know, have a quick conversation with someone and get everything straight than go back and forth on texts and emails all day long. So that would be my very long response to why I love how I got inspired to go into voiceover.
Okay. So could you actually kind of walk us through the process of being a voiceover artist? Like, you know, when you record a session, like not so much the technical aspect of it, but like more of the mental aspect, when you have to kind of become someone else, you know?
That's a good question. Well, it sort of depends on what the role is and what the project is. So for example, for a McDonald's commercial, where I'm the announcer, I'm probably not going to stray too far from my own natural personality, or if I am, it's going to be a much more real personality. So you just stay present with it.
Okay.
Treat it as if you're really talking to someone, as if it's a real conversation, even though there's no one actually responding in your own mind. You treat it as if, hey, isn't this a great deal? Doesn't this sound great? Let me tell you about this, so that it sounds authentic and like, you know, the audience will then feel like, oh, they're really talking to me, or this sounds cool because it sounds like someone actually talking to someone, as opposed to those horrible late night infomercials where it just sounds like someone's yelling at you.
Yeah.
So it really depends on the role. And if it's a video game, again, it will depend on how much of a character departure it is from my natural personality and natural voice. If it's a voice match, I could spend 2 days listening over and over and over again to the celebrity that I'm voice matching, and also watching reference video, watching them in interviews, watching clips from different movies they're in to really capture their face and their expressions and their movement so that it feels even more like them.
What exactly is voice match, and how common is that?
Voice matching, it happens a lot, and it's a specialized part of the voiceover world, and it falls under the it's sort of a subcategory of animation.
Okay.
Character / animation is one category in voiceover. Commercial / retail is another, and the third category is promo / narration. So everything that's a cartoon, animated feature, video game, toys, you know, all of that sort of thing falls under, obviously, character animation. And all the commercials you hear on the radio or on TV, that falls under commercial / retail, where the purpose of it is to sell somebody without it sounding like you're selling them on it. Mm. And then the last category, promo / narration, is, for example, coming up next on NBC, you know, stay tuned. Movie trailers fall under that category, video game trailers, and long form narration when you watch the Biography Channel or the History Channel and someone's narrating.
Of course, right. Yeah. Or crime reenactment or all that type of stuff. Yep.
Yeah. Those all require slightly different or very different skill sets. You know, some people really specialize in one category and not so much the other.
I can imagine, yeah.
Some people do all three of them. So, anyway, voice matching is a specialized part of character / animation where they need to voice replace a celebrity. Sort of like voice doubling is, you know, as opposed to stunt doubling.
Oh, okay. I got you. Yep.
And it's used for a lot of reasons. If they need to replace a line of dialogue or several lines of dialogue in a movie because they're now in post-production and the microphones on the actors were disturbed by airplanes or there was noise interference or something that they said wasn't as clear as you're going to want it in the final picture. They always first, of course, want the celebrities. And of course, the celebrities also want to match their own voice, especially if it's a very important role to them. But if they absolutely can't get in to replace certain things, they'll use a voice match. All of the awesome shows and toys and video games that are spun off from the various Pixar and Disney movies.
Mm-hmm.
Those, they'll always want the celebrity first. And sometimes it will depend on availability of the celebrity who created the role. Sometimes it will depend on budget, but if they can't get either of those aligned, availability or budget and or budget, then they'll get the voice match to do it. And then there's also the case of when a movie airs on cable or Prime TV and they need to replace certain language.
Right. That's what I was to say, the edited for television version.
Yeah. And sometimes those are, you know, like for airplanes, they'll want it to sound really good. And sometimes it's very successful and seamless. And sometimes you can tell that there was a little bit of a voice replacement, but that's voice matching.
Okay. So you seem to be a happy, upbeat person for the most part. How did you get into the headspace to perform as Constance?
It's pretty easy to slip in and out of the characters when you have a great understanding of the atmosphere, the setting, the sort of the place and time of it. Mm-hmm. It's sort of what we're expected to do as voice talent. So I don't want to make it sound like it's all methody and like, oh, I really had to get in character to make sure that I, you know, voice matching is about as close to that mindset as you have to get, because you really are trying to replicate exactly how a celebrity voices something. But I think ultimately for Constance, what I was aware of is this, in callbacks, they told me that it was for the Haunted Mansion. They told me that it was, they wanted a voice that was alluring and that would appeal to, you know, sort of every man, because her character, of course, is supposed to be able to attract any man that she wants, because otherwise, why would they, you know,
right?
Why would someone keep be willing to marry her when mysteriously her previous marriages all ended? And in theory, she wasn't roaming around the world. So the idea of her was that she was so alluring that it didn't matter that nobody knew whatever happened to her previous husbands. Men would still be willing to marry her. So I had that piece of the puzzle, and I knew that it was to fit into the classic mansion. And they said, we want to keep the legacy and the history of the character, sorry, of this new character, so that it felt as if she always was part of the mansion.
Right.
It wasn't like we just dropped something brand new in there. So it was as if, oh, here's something that you've discovered that has always been a part, but now is made visible to you. And so it needed to somewhat fall into the tradition of other voice talent, other amazing voices in the mansion.
Right. Well, that you brought up a kind of interesting point I wanted to touch on. So this was change was put in 2006, I believe. So how do you feel about them doing a change in the mansion, or how did you feel in 2006? Like personally,
I was probably like a lot of Disney fans. I think having been raised going to Disneyland Park and being thoroughly enamored with the mansion and Pirates of the Caribbean, you know, two classic amazing attractions that will never be replicated in terms of the amazing magic that they brought to it. I mean, the Imagineers today do incredible things. So not to say that what's currently being done is not phenomenal and magical, but, you know, there's a specialness to what Walt created, of course. Mm-hmm. And I probably was on the fence about it. I mean, again, it was confidential up until callbacks, so I didn't know what I was going in for the first round. And once I knew, I think I was like any other fan. On the one hand, super excited that I would have the chance to play a very tiny, tiny, tiny role, adding into something phenomenal that Walt Disney had had a hand in creating. It was beyond my comprehension,
I
couldn't kind of believe it. Still don't. I mean, I truly still. It's weird and odd to be able to say that. And on the other hand, the fan part of me was like, oh my gosh, I hope they don't mess this up. I mean, I really hope that whatever's going in really does feel seamless. And I can't remember. I'm pretty sure. I cannot remember, actually. Did Jack Sparrow go into Pirates of the Caribbean before or after this?
It was the same year that I know. I'm not sure exactly when it was, though. I know it was 2006 when Jack Sparrow came in.
Okay. Yeah, I don't remember, but I do know that it was that same feeling of when I first went into Pirates of the Caribbean, you know, just sort of holding my breath. How did they put this character in, and how much is it going to sort of get in the way or interfere with the classic amazing storytelling that I have grown to love? And, you know, that was my concern as well. And it was none of my business. You know, I was the lucky person who won the lottery and got to voice it.
Oh, of course. Yeah, you're going to do your job. I was just wondering how you personally felt when you found out. You
know? I was holding my breath, I'm sure, like every other fan, to see how it all happened. And I was really thrilled, aside from the surrealness of the disconnect that happens, because, of course, I'm hearing my own voice, and there's no way to really pretend that it's, you know, I can't get fully developed the way anybody else can. There was a part of me that was like, oh my God. I mean, the set design is phenomenal. The atmosphere, the lighting, the effects are stunning. And it definitely felt like a part of the mansion. It didn't feel like something had just been thrown in there. And the same with Jack Sparrow. I think they did an incredible job of integrating that character in so that it feels like it's part of the world. It doesn't feel like, and we dropped in this.
Right. I was going to ask you your thoughts since you brought up pirates. I thought they did a great job. It's strange because the Jack Sparrow animatronics are so advanced, way more advanced than the other ones. But for some reason, they still seem to work. You know, so it's just that Disney magic we can't figure out. It just worked.
Yeah, and I think part of the reason, I mean, if you get into a conversation about Jack Sparrow, which, you know, I know is not what you're talking to me about, and right, I can't speak on Disney's behalf, and I could never, nor would I ever try to speak on Disney's behalf as to what their thought process was, but I would hazard to guess that part of the reason that Jack Sparrow does fit so seamlessly into the world is because, of course, Johnny Depp has gone on record saying that the whole way that he came up with his character for Jack Sparrow was he was imitating the movements and the attitude and the motion of the auctioneer in Pirates of the Caribbean. I don't know if you knew that. He's gone on record saying that when he was one of the reasons why he moves the way he moves, mm-hmm, as Jack Sparrow and sort of that odd, interesting, you know,
yeah,
sort of way, was he basically did a full life imitation of the auctioneer.
Wow, I did not know that. That's very interesting. You could kind of see it now that you mentioned that.
Yeah. So in a weird sense, Johnny Depp was sort of imitating the audio animatronics. So then when the audio animatronic Jack Sparrow went into Pirates, it wasn't so far of a leap. You know, it's not like he moves. It's not like he moves like a fluid, regular human being. He's exaggerated and heightened and sort of, you know, has that awesome vibe to him. So
interesting. Well, back to the mansion. yeah, you touched on this a little bit, but what's it like going through and hearing your own voice?
It's weird.
Yeah.
It's hard to describe, you know, it's an attraction that I grew up with. So it's not just that I'm hearing myself on the radio, which is already, you know, that's always a little bit odd when I'm driving and suddenly something's playing on the radio that I voiced. There's first that moment of, oh, that sounds kind of familiar. oh, wait a second. Oh, that's me.
That's funny.
And that usually is how it goes, because you hear the words first and your brain remembers reading that copy. Sometimes something sounds familiar because I auditioned for it, but I didn't get it, I recognize the copy. And then sometimes it's like, oh yeah, that's me. And things always sound different coming back, you know, broadcast back.
Right. Of course.
Than they do in your own head. That's why people have that experience of hearing themselves on an answering machine or voicemail and kind of tripping out, because how we hear ourselves in our own ear is different from how the outside world hears us.
Right. So you never actually, a lot of times you haven't even heard the end result until you hear it on the radio or something like that.
Yeah. Or on the TV. Yeah.
In the case of Constance, I'm sure you didn't hear it until you're on the attraction.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they did a beautiful job. It's phenomenal, with a lot of sound, a lot of magic, audio magic that's mixed in there. So yeah, just feel very honored and humble in the truest sense that I am really just the lucky winner of being the voice of this amazing character and this set piece in the mansion. And it's always a little bit odd. Sometimes I'm more relaxed and zen about it and just like, oh, well, here comes me. and then sometimes I'll just get so caught up in it that it takes me by surprise, you know, It will take me by surprise occasionally again. Not like I didn't know that it's coming, but I'm so immersed in the atmosphere and enjoying it so much. And then usually hear the heartbeat first.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so then it's like, oh, that's right. Okay, here we go. And there's a part of me, and I think every voice talent would probably say this, maybe most, I think there's a part of me that it's always like, I wonder if I could have done that line a little bit differently.
Of course, yeah.
Critic that hears it back and goes, oh, God, you know. I think they did, like I said, they did a beautiful job. So there's nothing truly critical, but the artiste or whatever inside of me is always a little bit like, oh, I could have done this a little bit differently, or that's an interesting way that came out, or.
Right, of course. I think everyone's like that. That creates something kind of perfectionist in a way, you know.
Yeah.
So, have you, I assume you've experienced Haunted Mansion Holiday before?
I have, yeah. The overlay.
The overlay. That's the Nightmare Before Christmas one. So, I mean, this might be an obvious question, but, you know, do you wish that they kept the bride in there somehow? And do you have any ideas of how that would have been?
Well, no, because it's, I'm pretty sure they replace most of the characters, don't they?
Not really, cause, the groundskeeper, graveyard guy, whatever, that's replaced by Jack Skellington. And of course the singing bus replaced by Pumpkins. And then the hitchhikers are replaced by the Oogie Boogie and the kids. But actually, I just proved myself wrong. But I was just thinking that because the Hatbot Ghost is still there. Because he just rejoined the mansion recently, but he's still there during Haunted Mansion Holiday. So it's something that I was thinking about even prior to this interview.
I mean, the gist that I get, and I'm pretty sure, I can't remember, but I think the Nightmare Before Christmas overlay started before the bride went in, correct?
Yes, that is
so
true.
I think that part of it, I don't know. Again, I could never speak for the awesomeness of Disney and the Imagineers, but I'm sure part of it was, it built gradually. The whole Nightmare Before Christmas overlay, I think in a certain sense, it was sort of a proof of concept when they first started it. They didn't have the budget behind it or even know if people were going, how people were going to respond to it. So, and that was 10,
I think it's
more
15
than 10
years. I think it's 15 years ago, if I'm not mistaken.
So I would guess that they just didn't even have a way to translate or necessarily think about it because they already had the overlay all set up. And then this new character got added. And I'm sure there was conversation about, well, is she going to say something that fits in with the Nightmare Before? Again, I'm just fully hypothesizing, but it's one thing to have Madame Leota change her spiel because she's not really, she's a different kind of a character. She's a gypsy telling fortunes and reading rhymes that have to do with a seance, and that you can sort of flip and rewrite stuff that has to do with the Nightmare Before Christmas. The bride is such a specific character with portraits and a history behind her. You really get a sense of who she is.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And she's not part of the Nightmare Before Christmas world. So my guess is that it just doesn't really make sense for her to, it doesn't make sense. Why would she? It's not like she's part of you know what I'm saying? I don't know if I'm saying it correctly.
No, I get what you're saying, yeah. Like Madame Leota, who stays, is vague. Hatbox Ghost doesn't talk. So, it's just, you can kind of change it. But yeah, that's why I was wondering what your thoughts of what the change might be, if there was a change, because I don't know what that would be.
I think they probably think, what characters could stay where, A, it's not going to be too jarring to remove it, and B, won't get in the way of the story. Because Disney's so wonderful with the idea of story. Mm-hmm. So if it fits within the story of Nightmare Before Christmas, then I'm sure that, it stays. And these guys, obviously they really think, they're geniuses, so they really think this stuff through.
Oh, of course.
They keep anything in that won't jar you out of the story of Nightmare Before Christmas, if it's going to yank you out of that story and have you questioning the story, then I'm sure it has to go. And so I know that, you know, they pulled a lot of the audio tracks and replaced them. If the character is silent, it probably is less jarring to keep it in.
Right.
And I know they replaced, didn't they replace little Leota with Sally?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think it's just a matter of if it fits the story. So my answer would be no, if the bride has no business being in Nightmare Before Christmas, then she shouldn't be in there.
All right, you've convinced me. I just miss her. That's all. I love the Nightmare Before Christmas overlay, but, you know, when I hit the attic, I like the 1-2 punch now with the Hatbox Ghost being there. Bride's a Hatbox Ghost, so.
I understand.
So moving a little way away from Haunted Mansion stuff, so you mentioned you've been a Disney fan your whole life. Was there any Disney movie in particular that scared you a lot when you were a kid?
Yeah, I think in all the places where they are supposed to, because of course I saw all of the Disney movies in a theater. We didn't yet have, when I was a tot, we didn't have DVRs or DVDs or VHSs or any of that. We didn't even have cable except for the Z channel, which replayed some movies. And that's like, you know, again, I've watched a lot of Game Changes in terms of all that. I'm not even that old, but it's been phenomenal in the last 20 years. What's right. gone on with technology. So I think it's probably really hard for kids, for anybody who's under the age of 35, to realize that we didn't have things just on demand to pull up on our YouTube or on our phones or on an iPad or on a computer. So I saw all of those movies in a theater, which makes the experience far more powerful. I will argue that any day, that being in the dark, seeing it on a giant screen, the way it was created to be seen.
Right.
And there is a different craft for any of those young filmmakers out. You know, there's obviously a much different mindset. If something's going to be on a small screen, you focus on different things and you put your emphasis on different things. If it's going to be on a large screen, you change your lens, you change your approach to it. So I saw these the way that they were intended, and therefore I think their emotional impact was far more powerful than how some kids, unfortunately, are getting to see these amazing classics. And so there, I would say, yes, you know, Walt and his amazing crew had an incredible vision for how these were supposed to create emotions in kids and families.
Yeah, for sure.
So any movie that was supposed to scare the pants off of you in a certain moment, I'm sure I was 100% terrified.
I bet. I'm actually lucky enough to have seen Snow White twice in the theater, so that's how old I am. Two different runs. But one when I was really young and one when I was a preteen. And yeah, those images and the dungeon and the transformation and the death, you're very right. Those images on the big screen when a kid, when everything's larger in life when you're a kid anyways, but let alone that, that's something that stayed with me even to this day, which is part of why I do this podcast. So
yeah, and the sound element too. There's a much different emotional pull on you on one when they're surrounded by it. Obviously that's why surround sound and everything else has come to be, and all the other amazing Dolby and THX, you know, and Lucas sound, everything else, is that, you know, if you're watching something scary and you turn off, you mute it, it suddenly becomes a heck of a lot less scary.
Right, of course. It's
yeah, and I can't watch gruesome things. I can't be anywhere close to anything that all those movies that are about gruesome and mangling and all of that, I can't watch it. And my trick, if it pops up on the screen for 2 seconds, you know, is to mute it immediately or to close my ears in the movie theater. If I'm seeing something and there's something like bone crunching or horrible going on, I literally plug up my ears because then I can watch it and it's not nearly as terrifying. So I think, again, being a kid in a theater surrounded by that sound vibrating through the seats and through your body makes it a lot scarier.
Yeah, no, it's the whole thing. Yeah, it's hitting the audio and visual cues that go deep into your psyche for sure. Let's think about the Fantasyland dark rides that are based on a lot of these films. I would say, particularly in Disneyland's Fantasyland, all those rides are pretty super dark. You know, like, did you ride those rides at a young age, and was that scary for you?
I don't think the dark rides were scary for me. I mean, Haunted Mansion was definitely scary. I know that my father had to lie to me initially to get me to go on it. He called it the Magic Castle. Oh, and I didn't know what the Magic Castle was because I don't think I'd even though we were here in Los Angeles, I don't think I knew what the Magic Castle was, but it sounded a lot less scary. And he knew that he couldn't say that it was Sleeping Beauty's castle because he knew that I would, or sorry, he knew that he couldn't call it, you know, the Disneyland castle.
Okay.
So right. Called it the Magic Castle. I you know, believed him enough to stop crying long enough to get in there. And then I'm sure he just held me really tight. And I know I screamed and cried. There's no way that my first few times in it, I wasn't screaming hysterically and crying. I was probably the kid that every parent was going, why did you bring this kid attraction? But he really wanted me to enjoy an experience.
I'm sure you thanked him for that later, right?
I'm sure I did. Yeah.
Yeah, the first time I rode Mansion, I think I was 9 or 10 or something like that. So I didn't get that really young experience. So is there any upcoming things that you want to talk about that you're involved in?
I am part of an amazing organization called Ween Dream, which is a Halloween charity that helps match kids who can't, you know, families who cannot afford Halloween costumes with brand new Halloween costumes.
Wow, that's awesome.
And it's so amazing, and it's centered out of New Orleans, Louisiana. And it's a small group of attorneys, actually, out there, lawyers of all people, who during law school, while they were putting themselves through law school, started this charity. And it's incredible. And you can look them up. It's just Ween Dream. And their Twitter is the same. And so that's coming up. That's very exciting, getting to help out with that. And there's a really cool, I almost forgot to mention this. There's an amazing sweepstakes going on Radio Disney that I was lucky enough to be a part of. And it's basically in celebration of the Diamond anniversary, you know, the Disney celebration. Mm-hmm. Radio Disney is doing a Halloween sweepstakes/contest that is centered around Constance and around my Disney story. Having been, you know, raised in the Disney culture. So that actually starts on October 25th. And wow. It's really cool. That's all I can do. Like the final prize and the, you know, the end of the competition is really amazing. And it's for kids, you know, teenagers, kids, and families. And I would say definitely people should pay attention to Radio Disney starting October 25th or, you know, look it up on Instagram or Facebook or any of those because it's an amazing Halloween competition.
Well, I'm very intrigued, so I'll have to do so.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Well, lastly, before I get out of here, if people want to find you on the internet, how do they go about doing that?
Oh, they can go to all my handles are my name, which is Cat Cressida. So Cat with a K, Cressida with a C, and then two S's. And it's pretty easy to find. I think my name's pretty unique, and my website. I have both a mobile site and a desktop site. They can just go to catcressida.com. And my Twitter is at catcressida. My Facebook is at catcressida. And my Instagram is at catcressida.
Wonderful. And
there's a couple of hints about, we drop a hint every day about the sweepstakes coming up for Radio Disney as well.
Well, we'll have to keep following, try to figure out the hints.
I will say, if you're a major Mansion fan, Twilight Zone fan, Disney fan, ESPN fan, or video game fan, you're going to love my everything that we post. And if you don't like any of those things, then you probably won't be very interested in what goes on my Twitter.
I'm sure our listeners would like at least one of those things. So it'll be all good. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, James.
Roxy.
Hey, James.
Have you seen the Dark Side of Disney documentary?
I have seen it. I saw it on the West Coast. Have you?
I saw it there as well.
Crazy.
A little bit. Yeah, it's weird you didn't say hi to me. I don't think that everyone listening got to see it.
It was on the West Coast, and I think that's a little far for our East Coast listeners to go.
If only there was an East Coast screening of the Dark Side of Disney documentary.
James, there is one.
Our prayers have been answered.
It's going to be on November 14th.
That's amazing. Do you know where it's going to be? I mean, the East Coast is pretty big.
It's an Orlando Walt Disney World premiere. It's going to be at a comic and collectible shop in downtown Orlando called Gods and Monsters. And I know that sounds a little intimate, but the place is a massive bar that seats 250 people for screenings.
Wow. That sounds like the ultimate place to see this documentary.
It is.
Is there anything else going on besides a movie screening?
Actually, there is. Before the documentary, at 7 o'clock, there's going to be a Dark Side costume contest. And then after the documentary, there'll be a Q&A session.
Wow, that sounds like a fun-filled evening of fun-filled fun activities.
Y'all, Dark Side of Disney, East Coast premiere, Gods and Monsters, downtown Orlando, November 14th.
Get your tickets now by going to DSODDOC.com. Hey, everybody. It's James here, with Cupcake Tur.
Hello, everybody.
And Sarah Bunny.
Hi.
Listeners are home like, who is the
Sarah Bunny? Why is she here looking all cute and stuff? Or sounding
well, yeah, they can't see her.
Can't see.
But anyways, I have met up with you two. We are walking through the promenade between Disneyland and Disney California Adventure at the end of a park day for you guys.
I just
came to say hi and ride one ride, but
yeah, but it was a good ride. We rode cars, racers, Radiator Spring racers. Not Cars Land.
Cars Racers.
Land.
We hold the whole land.
We hold the road. Wait, oh, wow.
Well,
we hold the whole land.
To be fair, when Cupcake texted me, she said she was in Carl Land.
Look, my thumbs can't always do the talking, okay? This is not the Yellow Pages.
All right, very nice. moving on from Carl, and so, but we're recording right now because you two went to a very special, exclusive one percenter event.
That was not sold out or full.
Okay. I think people could have walked up and gotten tickets for it tonight.
It was still a one percenter event.
It was still a 1% event. Yes.
1% and awesome ladies event.
Yes, and awesome ladies. So, what was the name of the event?
It was called the Trader Sam's Mahaloween. Mahalo being thank you in Hawaiian, and
Halloween being Halloween.
Thanks for the explanation.
Welcome.
So this was a dinner, right?
Yes. Yeah, it was a buffet dinner. We got two drink tickets. We can choose between beer, wine, or their signature drink, which was a fabulous rum drink, two different types of rum, dark and light rum, some falernum, some ginger. He explained it to me. I'm like, oh, I want the recipe. And then I realized I know how to make this. But it was really tasty, strong. It was also very hot and very humid today. So I think it was in like the high 90s. Or no, high 80s, low 90s, and humid.
You had mentioned you felt like you actually were in Hawaii.
Yes, I did. I felt like I was living in Hawaii again, and it was hot, and I was unhappy, and I was fat and really hungry and drunk.
What a combo. So, now we're in downtown Disney, by the way, if you want to walk in by the La Brea Bakery, if you want to go along on the journey with us here.
Can we also talk about this water fountain? It always smells bad. And I don't know why people want to sit near it and like, oh, it's so beautiful. Let me get... No, the water stinks. It's like the Pirates of the Caribbean waters. No one wants that water in their mouth. You might die.
Whoa.
Yes, you're very true. We're going to move on from that. So...
The listeners will have to forgive me. I have one of the... what do you call it? Mickey's wands?
It's a magical paintbrush.
Magical paintbrush that controls the special ears for the 60th and the, was it World of Color ears?
Right.
So if I leave.
By the way,
I
think we need to walk through this very cold store, the World of Disney, because we're sweating at 10:30 at night and it's freezing in here.
Oh, look, Barbie.
No, I don't. Let's stay on point here. We're podcasting.
We can't stay on target for a Disney store.
Oh, hold on, I gotta fix my shoe.
Ladies and gentlemen, James is trying to make me stay on target while we're walking through the Disney store. This is not gonna happen.
Yes, you have to be a professional podcaster, okay?
Well, professional, yes. Podcaster, no.
Okay, all right. So, anyways, the event. Where exactly did it take place?
It took place on the lawn over near the Old Cook's Point, just down the walkway from Trader Sam's. It's over where Goofy's Kitchen is, and there's that big lawn area.
That's at the Disneyland Hotel, by the way.
That's where they show the movies, at the Disneyland Hotel.
For people that have never been here before. Okay. So, this was a Halloween Hawaiian event, so let's ask about both of those things. How much Halloween stuff do you think was happening there?
It was haunted.
Yeah.
Now, how was it haunted?
So our resident host, who was, what was his name?
Dr. something.
Dr. Skip Town.
Yes.
Dr. Skip Town.
Skip Town?
So Dr. Skip Town found all of these tiki masks hidden downstairs in a basement, covered up with a warning saying, don't do this on pain of death and curse. So we figured he'd bring him out and show all of us lovely people what he found, because he doesn't believe in curses. He brought out the tiki masks, unveiled them, which is really cute. They all had different meanings, which we might have to look up later on, because I can't remember them right now.
That's no problem.
wait, hold on.
Keep talking.
I can't. We're walking. Zoom, zoom. Zoom,
mugs.
Sorry.
Focus.
This is James's fault. We can't podcast while we walk. Okay. So he brought out all the tiki masks and then proceeded to explain all of them. It was really cheesy, but kind of fun. He was supposed to be drunk. I didn't believe him because I was drunk. Not really. I wasn't really drunk. But you do get two drink tickets and parking validation, which was nice, except we didn't park because we walked here from the hotel. But the drinks were really good. And so by the time we finished the second one, he was actually funny. It was a little bit longer than I thought, but it was a really great introduction and kind of a kitschy way to have a storyline for the event, which was Mahalloween. And that's, you know, Mahalloween is an event that happens in the Pacific Islands, and you have to be really good or Pele kicks your butt.
Okay.
That's kind of the basis of it, and the curse and everything like that. So as he's talking about these different tiki masks that he's displaying and revealing, lightning and thunder starts to happen, and then they unveil the last one.
And there was a creepy, like, little kid laugh, like,
Minihunis. So Minihunis, if you don't know, in Hawaiian culture, are actually a real thing. They're little spirits that exist that like to have fun and cause trouble and are good and bad at the same time. Not bad in a vicious way, but bad in a, I'm just going to cause a little bit
troublemaker,
of
troublemakers.
Yeah, troublemakers, yeah.
I hear that these are, they're all over Aulani, the Disney Hawaiian resort that goes all over the place.
Yes, and it's actually a really great way to honor the traditions that exist in Hawaii, Samoa, New Zealand, because it's all really the South Pacific Islands. They all really have those same beliefs because it's really kind of have melded. I'm not getting into the history of Hawaii and all the South Pacific because that's...
Oh, let's do it. Come on, this is the History of Hawaii podcast.
Well, there was a moment in time, and please, the people are going to hate me if I don't quote the right dates, but there was a moment in time where the Hawaiian Islands had started to dwindle in numbers. People were dying of disease, famine. It was just become a horrible thing, and so the monarch at the time petitioned the rulers of England to bolster their numbers so that the islands, the people of Hawaii, wouldn't die. So they traveled to Samoa and French Polynesia, New Zealand, and brought these people over. And I'm paraphrasing, obviously.
Right.
But they brought all these people over, and that's why you see now a lot of the New Zealand gods that have become part of Hawaiian culture. And people are like, oh, it's cultural appropriation. No, it's really not, because this is part of who we are and part of what we've done to survive.
Okay.
So it's a really quick, super, super quick.
Right on. And you say we because?
Because I'm Hawaiian.
Okay. Just wanted to clarify.
I'm Hawaiian. If we haven't talked about this before, I am Hawaiian, Filipino, and Russian. I'm kind of a mutt, but yes, definitely know about the culture, live there, blah, blah, blah.
I just wanted to know your listeners know you were qualified to say we.
No, I'm really just a Russian that has no idea what's going on. Yeah.
All right, so back to the event.
So after he does his little spiel, he introduces the dancers. So he introduces the dancers, and they represent different parts of the South Pacific. So they had two guys come out that were from New Zealand and did the Maori dance, where they make the really ugly faces and the eyes roll back in their head. And what they do is it's warding off evil spirits and also letting them know that they see you. And if you make an ugly face back at them, they accept you, and you're an equal, and you're okay, and you're allowed to hang out and be cool with them.
And do they explain this, or are you just...
Yeah, no. They explain that. So. Okay. And I'm not as little as I know about the Maori culture. I do know some, but it's not a lot. So it was really interesting to learn that about it. The bulk that I know of the Maori and the Samoan culture is because Westmore High School, I was a cheerleader in high school, and Westmore.
You were a cheerleader in high school?
Shut up. The Westmore High School in South San Francisco had a lot of Samoans in it, and they would do that dance, and all of their cheerleaders were like Samoan chicks, and they were 6 foot tall and scared the crap out of me. No, not as these girls were. They were tall. So that's how I kind of learned about it and, like, talking, you know, researching, and then talking with family about it, too. So they did that dance, and then they... What was the next one? The ones after them, they did... The Hula Dancers? But they were from... Yeah, Tahitian. They were from the Cook Islands, which exists farther south. So the farthest south is New Zealand, and then slightly more north would be Cook Islands. After that, it was the chief from Samoa who did the fire dance. It was, he did the fire, what do you call it?
Fire sword?
Fire stick. It was like a double-ended fire
thing. Oh, it was like swinging around like a baton?
Yeah. It was rad. He actually balanced this baton, like staff. Oh, fire staff. Thank you.
Fire staff.
Thank you, brain, for working. He balanced the fire staff on fire on the heels of his feet.
Wow.
Yeah. So obviously he's not a wussy with his feet at all in any way, shape, or form. It was really amazing to watch. And then they all, after that, they grabbed volunteers from the audience.
So
and took them out. I did not volunteer, but I wasn't not volunteering. I did make eye contact, but they were they were grabbing the people that were, yeah. So they were grabbing the people that were older.
Older.
Over 40.
Okay.
Obviously, I don't look over 40. I do look young and cute, like I can dance, and I would have shown them up. No, that's not totally not true. I probably would have been super, super nervous. So they did say, the guy said, you know, if a dancer asks you to come up, you can't say no, which is a really great way to tell people you have to come up here because we're not going to sit here and convince you for 10 minutes to come up and then not have you come up.
So many people say no, though.
But they went for, like, it was, like, super quick. Like, no, fine, fine. And then they got everybody up there. There was one guy at the very end. Oh, my God. He was moving it. Like, I would have thought that he was a hula dancer in a past life. Because he's, like, they're shaking. So you basically had to do whatever the hula dancers did and whatever the guys did. And it was hilarious. I mean, this guy was moving and shaking things. I'm like, I didn't think that guy was going to be able to move like that.
Well, you never know. People put on the spot.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So,
it sounds like a lot of activity going on.
There was a lot of activity.
You don't know their Disney routine.
Yeah, you don't know your Disney routine.
Oh,
so,
watch out there. You're walking into people.
And I'm walking into everybody over here. So after that, it was just really kind of, they did, Skip Town came back out, Dr. Skip Town came back out, and like said a quick spiel and basically thanked everybody for coming out and enjoying and partaking in Mahalloween and the history of Mahalloween as he knows it, because he's Trader Sam's, what did he call him? His literary doctor, but only for like a week and a half, a week and a day. And he had been testing the drinks like, you know, a few hours before.
Gotcha.
So it's very tongue-in-cheek. So, yeah, and then, you know, everybody came out and they said goodbye. The band, I have to say one thing. The dancers were amazing. They were all very beautiful and just so very well-versed in hula, and everything about it was just gorgeous.
Shakira has nothing on them.
No, Shakira's nothing. Everyone's like, oh, Shakira's got hips. I'm like, Shakira can't move like a Tahitian dancer. If she could, she'd be making a lot more money. But no, that's not the case. So, so yeah, it was really nice to see. And I had... Okay, hold on. Let me take that. Oh, thanks, James. James just took my bag because it kept hitting him with it, and we weren't able to actually record anything because I was kicking him and hitting with this bag. Anyhow, so the dancers were really beautiful. It was a lot of fun, just smiles and good times. I didn't feel... Like, for a moment, I felt that as a Hawaiian... And I'm not, like, full-blooded Hawaiian. I do have to say that now, but I have been, like, rooted with Hawaiian culture my entire life, and I do love it very much. I didn't feel as a Hawaiian that it was offensive or they were, you know, like, taking advantage of the culture and making fun of it in any way. It was very lighthearted. It was very much tongue-in-cheek because Trader Sam's is tongue-in-cheek.
Right.
It's very much tiki style times, you know, a million because it's Disney. And they just did, they did a really wonderful job with it.
So what, you guys got, some exclusive things?
Yeah, so we got a lithograph of Trader Sam, the head trader of the Jungle Cruise, and I'm sure anybody that knows this podcast and knows Disney will know who Trader Sam is. We do have a lithograph. It was offered that we could get it signed by two of the artists, but we... We needed to go and get drinks at Carthay Circle in DCA before it closed today because we're only here for a couple days.
We needed to do
so,
that.
So, yeah, we needed to do that. So we did not get it signed.
Do you know the artists were?
Okay. They said, but I
forget. They said, but we don't remember. Because
you didn't know who they were.
No, we didn't know. Yes, and unfortunately, we didn't know who they were. Like, I'm really not up on my artist verse of who's who. So, also that, and then we got one tiki mug, and then you were able to purchase another tiki cup, which was like a pumpkin. And oh, that's my wand, people. That's my wand. We should end the podcast with that. So we purchased the extra tiki mug because the woman said, she's like, you know, this is only offered for this event. It is not going to be available. Once they're gone, they're gone. you know, if you don't buy it, you might regret it. And the moment she said that, Sarah and I were both like, okay, we're gone. Let's go get it. And we walked inside, got our mugs, and then headed over to California Adventure.
All right.
In our Carthay Circle experience, which is always good.
So I was joking about that it was a 1%er event. So, because it was pretty expensive.
Oh, it was, yes.
It was $150.
It was $150 per single ticket. There were no discounts for an annual pass holder in any way, shape, or form. But the events I think that Trader Sam's have been putting on are kind of like that. The food wasn't amazing, but it was good. They did have Spam sliders, which made me so happy. Is there a little slider buns with pieces of Spam? Or ham or whatever it was. And pineapple.
Spam. Huh?
Spam. Okay. You cannot talk smack on Spam because Spam is good for you. Okay.
Cupcake loves it.
I do. Here to the people that are drinkers that listen to this podcast and suffer hangovers, as I have done on numerous occasions. If you have a hangover and you are hungry, the best food is teriyaki Spam fried up in a Kraft mac and cheese or whatever mac and cheese box that you prefer. Just like cook it up, throw it in there. Oh, it's so good.
I bet you didn't think you're getting that kind of information listening to Creepy Kingdom.
I am here to help your listeners. I'm here to enrich your listeners' lives.
Our listeners come.
Yeah.
Okay, they're not my listeners.
Our listeners. Sorry, yes, of course. It was good. They had some meatballs. They had seared ahi tuna spoons with some wasabi, big salmon roe, and scallions chopped up on the top. What else? Oh, they had these cupcakes. Oh, the cupcakes.
The cupcakes were good.
We should have grabbed more cupcakes. Yeah. I feel that we screwed up in the cupcake department.
Cupcake terror screwed up in the cupcake department.
Yes.
News
it was too
11.
Hot.
It was really hot. Did we mention how hot it was? It was really hot and very humid. There was a moment when we thought it was going to rain because it was drizzling. Like, but it wasn't just little drops. It was big drops of water coming down. And we're like, okay, if they call it and we have to go, I'm going to ask for my money back because that's $150.
How long was the event? That's the next question.
It was 2 hours, just about 2 hours.
It was an hour and a half.
Yeah, because I think they were done at like 7:30. And we got in, they let people in at 6, staged everything, everyone ate, and then that was it. Yeah, it was $150 for 2 hours, food and entertainment. I feel like it was worth it because of the cool swag that we got. But food-wise, maybe not. But I think that's because I work in the industry and I know the food costs.
Well, we didn't take really advantage of all
the food, we weren't, like, stuffing ourselves. You know, I mean, if I had gone back 3 times, I'd have been like, yeah, definitely. But, like, again, it was so hot. It was just really kind of difficult to get up out of the chair and go
really
back.
Feel like pigging out, really, is what you're saying.
No, not at all. Yeah. Not at all. I mean, all right, if there are people that can eat like that in the heat, more power to you. I am not one of those people. Sarah's not one of those people.
We can drink
in the heat. We're really good at drinking in the heat, though. Although, that's the thing about the drinks. So they made them more acidic than sweet, not easily drinkable. You couldn't have more than two. Even me, I was kind of like, that's a good drink.
But
I was not feeling, I'm like, oh, I can have a third. No, I don't want a third one. So that was definitely on purpose. So that you would have your three and go away. Two. My third moment to Carthay. That was the other thing that I noticed. Oh, sorry, James. I'm poking James with my magic wand. And that's not a creepy thing, but there were morals to Skip Town's stories. Like, it was a don't drink too much moral of the story, or don't overeat moral to the story. And I'm like, okay, this is cute and kind of weird. And I felt like Sarah and I were talking earlier about what is the pirate thing?
Oh, Jake the Pirate.
Jake the Pirates and how pirates don't steal. And we're like, Jake and Neverland Pirates. Yeah. We're like, I don't think you know your history. And we were talking about it earlier as we're in line for pirates. And as we're sitting there listening to Dr. Skip Town with these little morals of the stories, all I could think about was like, no, that's not right. Like,
I think they're just trying to get you to not, like,
overeat and drink. Yeah, exactly. They're like, we only have so much time and only so much money we're willing to spend on you people, even though you paid $150. Regardless, it was a premium event by Disney. It was put on, and they did a really great job with the presentation and everything, how it brought the audience in. Even when, you know, Dr. Skip Town was talking the stories and, you know, talk story about everything and telling the history of it, it was still including everybody in the audience. So it made it worth it.
So
I really feel.
Do you feel that it was, both of you, do you feel it was $150? No.
If you add up the swag, it's about that.
Yeah, so it wasn't like we were getting the swag for free. We kind of paid that premium for the swag and for meeting the artist, which we didn't actually do. But, yeah, I mean, if we were able to nix the swag, which I would have been fine with because of the experience factor, I would have paid a lot less. But.
So basically, if people want a nice dinner experience and are collectors of limited edition merchandise, it's worth it.
This would definitely be for them. Yes, you would definitely want to go and do this event because of that concept, for sure.
Nope,
but we should probably move out of the way. Let's not get ran over while we finish up the podcast.
Let's wrap it up.
Yeah, so I feel maybe not. I mean, if that's what you want to do, which I think these people that participate in these events want is the limited edition swag. Yeah. They want to say, I went to this and I had that experience. Then yes, definitely. It was something that they should do and experience and participate in. But for the normal, like, day-to-day person like me, who's an AP holder, and Sarah, who's an AP holder, premium pass holders, I think the experience was worth it, but maybe not so much a premium price, but I'm glad that we did it.
Oh, you didn't even say the tiki mug.
Yeah.
It looks like a Jack Skellington.
Yeah, it looks like Jack Skellington. His ghost on the back. So it looks like your regular bamboo short tiki mug with Jack Skellington's eyes in his mouth and an angry scout has a bunch of teeth. The eyes and mouth are orange. The teeth are white. And then the bulk of the mug is brown. And it's glazed. It's really beautiful. Yeah, we should take a picture. We'll have to take a picture and post it. The second mug that we got is also glazed, but it's orange. And we'll have to post a picture of that one maybe in the notes or something. But really, I think that made...
We'll have Sarah Bunny model them.
Yeah, Sarah Bunny will be modeling the like, the awesome swag
like
that we got.
Price is Right.
Barker's Beauty. I almost said Vanna White, but I'm like, no, that's the wrong game show.
Know your shows.
Know your shows. God. But I really, yeah, I think it was good. You know, I don't feel that I was robbed of my money in any way, shape, or form. I feel that I did get, I got my money's worth, you know, from Disney and from the experience and everything. What do you think, Sarah?
Yeah. The swag was really good. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I really wanted to come down for one day.
Because we're hardcore like that.
Yeah.
You guys live 6 hours
Northern
away?
California.
Okay, so would you guys do it again?
Yes. Yes, for me.
No, I probably wouldn't, because it was a lot of money. So, but I got my tiki mugs, and I'm happy.
Would you do it? What if they had a similar... I mean, they might not do the same exact thing again, but I'm sure they're going to do similar
events. They already did. This is the second offering that they've had, luau style. The first one that they did was... it was a couple months ago. I can't remember. One of the guys that I follow, Tiki Chippy, I believe is his Instagram name. He goes to a lot of these events. He is big into like the tiki world. He does the big Tiki Oasis Con and all that stuff in San Diego. He just went to one, and I want to say it was like a couple months ago. So I know this is Disney's second foray into the luau style world, you know, because it kind of goes along. Disneylands, yeah.
They have the Polynesian Resort, well, Disney World.
Right, and then Trader Sam's. Yeah, definitely. Well, now that they have Aulani, too, I think that it has opened up a new avenue for them creatively to have fun and show people about the Hawaiian culture, which is a lot of fun. So.
And staff that they can ship over.
Yeah, definitely. You never know. Maybe they were from Hawaii, they came over. I didn't get to research. I was hoping that we would meet them. Like, I was a little sad that we weren't able to, like, meet the dancers and take pictures. Because at, like, most luaus on the islands, you can snap pictures with the dancers and then that was not the case.
I guess they wanted to get to the buffet before all the food was gone.
Probably. Probably.
Worked up
I was
appetite.
So, yeah, I was totally down to take a picture with the guys because the guys looked awesome. But that's just me.
Thanks again to Kat for coming on the show. If you would like to contact us at this show that you are listening to, all you need to do is send us an email at the email address creepykingdom@gmail.com. And to check out any of our other podcasts, such as Curvy Cutie Chat, Roxy's World, and The Even James is a podcast. All you need to do is go to monstermoviemedia.com. And for show notes, videos, creepy Disney cosplay, and fan art pictures, and links to all of our social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Google+, Tumblr, and Pinterest, your one-stop shop is creepykingdom.com. And if you would like to help support us here at the Creepy Kingdom, then please visit patreon.com/creepykingdom. If you're listening to this every week as they get released, then here's some information you might want to know. There will be no show next week, but we will return with a brand new episode on October 30th, and that will be our Halloween episode. Again, I haven't announced what that is, but it's something we've never done before on the show. Nothing like anything that was during Creepy Days last year, which, if you're unaware, that's when we released an episode every day in October, counting down to Halloween. This is something brand new, and it's going to take 2 weeks worth of work. That's all I got to say, but I'm sure you guys are going to dig it. Until next time.
Keep it creepy. I have a girl now. It's midnight. Pleasant dreams.